What is up, Gamer Nation? This is GM Chris, and I am a Game On Minion. Munchkin player for life, yo! What?
Correctly with the correct amount.
D20 Radio, your gamer's role. www.d20radio.com.
Game On.
Gamer Nation, this is episode number 17 of Game On for April 11th, 2009. I'm your host, Brian, otherwise known as Fiddleback on the forums, and with me today, as every day, is that little slice of Turkish delight that gets stuck between your teeth, my good friend and gaming partner, Andy.
Brian, how are you doing today?
I'm doing passably well, sir. How are you?
Passably well, that's great. You know, I once had a gal on a street corner offer me some Turkish delight. It didn't sound like candy, but it did sound sweet.
Happy
Anyways,
ending.
Gamer Nation. Welcome to another episode of Game On.
Can you believe this is number 17?
17. Who'd have thought it would last this long?
I would have given it 5 minutes into episode one, but there you go. There you go. And here we are. There and here. Here and there. There and here.
That's right.
I'm putting this next to that. So what are we talking about today, Andy?
Well, the world of gaming lost another founding father this week with the passing of Dave Arneson. We pause to reflect and do something just a little bit special.
A little bit special.
A little bit.
Not that, you know, that Turkish Delight special. But special.
No, not nearly that special, but no. Special nonetheless.
It'll be special. Short best special. Upkeep phase. Well, thank yous go out today to GM Chris for the bumper you heard at the top of the show. If you'd like to send us a bumper, you can do so at gameon@d20radio.com. And it occurs to me that I haven't really made it clear that that email address is gameon, all one word, @d20radio.com. No spaces, no underscores, one word.
Game on.
Yes. We promise you don't have to like Munchkin. In fact, it might just be best not to mention it at all. Also of note, and I didn't write this in the notes, but I'm going to note it anyway. Yeah, that. Andy and I are trying out a slightly different software solution to our audio difficulties we've had over the last few casts. I don't know, maybe Gamer Nation hasn't really noticed it, but occasionally, for whatever reason, Skype likes to drop the audio on Andy really low and then gradually walk him back up to an audible level, because I guess apparently he's not fit for human ears. I don't know.
Well, you know, it's actually just me playing with my knobs on this end, but I wasn't going to tell you that.
I don't want to know about you playing with your knobs. I really, really don't. Anyway, so we're trying something a little different here. It may or may not work. I'm not sure yet. But there you go. I thought I'd throw that in there.
Yeah, thanks. Toss it under the bus with everything else.
Yeah.
We also want to thank everyone who has taken the time to rate and review us on iTunes. It's amazing how highly some of you regard us. If you enjoy the show, we'd enjoy having you rate us on iTunes. It helps the lost sheep out there find us so we can help shepherd them into the Gamer Nation. We've made it to page 2 on the strength of your reviews, and we think it might be kind of nice to make it to page 1. Everyone has to have a dream.
I dream of Genie with a light brown hair. Sorry. That's right, you told me never to sing again.
Yeah, well.
New shows, new episodes, new hosts. It's a barrel of exploding monkeys on the network this week. Grab a banana and give these shows a listen.
Them dreaded exploding monkeys. It's Monsters, Monsters, Monsters on Radio Free Hamlet. The latest adventures from the DM sees them taking a look at the Monster Manual from D&D 4E, as well as various other sources. They talk about selecting the right monster roles to challenge your PCs, their favorite monsters, and they introduce a new segment called Build This. Check in with Radio Free Hamlet, episode number 18, Monster Mash.
He did the mash.
Oh. I knew that was coming.
Yeah, sing it again. Sorry. Can't help it.
I knew it.
Can't help it. Nervous reflex. It's like Broadway Tourette's. Oh, dear. The Order 66 podcast launches episode 62 into the ether. GM David, GM David, he's very formal now, he's GM
yes,
David.
GM David.
I will be showing up in a coat and tie from now on the video. Thank you very much. Jeeves, my caviar, please. GM Dave and GM Chris interview Matt Nigley, Arthur, Arthur 2 on the rocks. Author of the well-reasoned and well-received and not at all inflammatory Gnome Stew article, The Concept of Star Wars RPG Should Die in a Fire.
Yeah.
What? Find out just what Mr. Nagley meant by that and more in an episode entitled Burn, 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 Burn Ring of Fire, however that goes, whatever. It also helps if I know the words when I start singing.
Well, you know, that's something you might
Burn
toss
Ring
under.
Of Fire, burn, burn, okay. For a small donation of $500, I will never sing on the podcast again. Ever. Ever.
I will get right on that.
You can mail that directly to me. I promise it will go to support absolutely nothing other than me. Yeah. So there you go.
The first episode of Geekapalooza is up and waiting. Awaiting. Is up and awaiting. God, I can't even have...
up and awaiting.
Yes. Up and awaiting your charming little ears. This. GM Dave and new host Twi'lek Goddess, Freudian slip, geek out over all sorts of things, discover Twi'lek's fascination with the Chrome Dome, and listen to Dave's Country Music Award name dropping. Expand your geekiosity with Geekapalooza, new from Ronco.
It's the Poppy Old Pocket Podcaster. And last, but certainly not least, reel number 3 of Cinematic Attic is entitled Animation Spectacular Spectacular. A name so good, they named it twice. Oh yeah, there's more. Jed and Brev talk animation history and monsters versus aliens. It's an animated discussion. It's an animated discussion of animation, all for you. So I'm so punny, it tears me up inside.
Yeah. Right. www.d20radio.com plays host to all these shows and lots more. Give it a look. Check out the community forums and join in the discussions while you're there. We promise it's fun and entertaining. Possibly even informative.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. Also, Nick at Crazy Custom Tees is narrowing down his choices for additional t-shirts. Did you know that?
I did not.
Yeah, we actually had a couple of people suggest a shirt for the show. It didn't make the poll.
Yeah, well.
I cried a little. Uh-huh. Inside.
Bastards.
Take part in the poll, which can be found via the swag thread on the forums, and tell Nick which shirts you'd like to see next, and harangue him for not selecting one of ours.
Yeah.
Harangue.
Harangue.
Yeah.
Harangutan.
I was waiting for you to get to that, actually.
You were, weren't you?
Yeah, there you go.
We'll be right back.
Bits and Pieces.
Bits and pieces of news and information from the gaming world have been hand-delivered to us by highly skilled recon gnomes we've let loose on the internets. There's no stopping those little buggers once they get going.
Indeed there is not. And I've tried. It doesn't help.
I've seen him.
Yeah, he's dangerous looking. He's got that shiv. Anyway. Klaus Westerhoff's The Stars Are Right, which first appeared at Spiel 08 in Germany from Pegasus Games, is scheduled for a June 2009 release from Steve Jackson Games. In this game, players try to align the heavens in the proper patterns in order to attract the great old ones to this world. Have you ever noticed that Steve Jackson Games seems to have one of two potential themes, either Munchkins or Cthulhu?
Yeah. It's a pretty strong theme.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you got something that works, go with it. And apparently they haven't found it yet.
Yep. Players need to start small, typically summoning smaller creatures first who will provide both points and special abilities to move the stars above. The first player to score 10 points from his assembled menagerie wins. The Stars Are Right is for 2 to 4 players, ages 12 and up, with a playing time of 60 minutes or less. And in our group, it will be a lot less. Oh, look, it says Steve Jackson. I'm done. But, you know, that's just us. You go ahead and play it if you want to. The game retails for $28, so it's guaranteed to have at least $7 worth of bits inside.
Yeah.
Oh, such bitterness. We're a positive, happy podcast. Yes, indeed.
Oh, jeez. Listen up, people. Wizards of the Coast filed 3 lawsuits against defendants in the United States, Poland, and the Philippines for copyright infringement of its recently released Dungeons & Dragons Player's Handbook 2. As a result, all electronic downloads of Wizards of the Coast products on RPGD Now and Paizo have been removified.
Yes. Extremely removed, as in, don't even bother looking for backups of the ones you've already got.
Exactly.
They are way gone. And let me tell you, that has put just the rosy smile on the face of Gamer Nation all over the world.
Oh, yeah. People are not happy about it.
Mm-mm. No. And it, you know, okay, let's be honest, yes. Technically, the downloading of illegal PDFs is copyright infringement and is a naughty no-no and will get you, you know, sent to the gulag or something. But also, let's face it, they ain't stopping anything by yanking those PDFs down from RPG Now and Paizo.
No, the only thing they're doing is pulling down PDFs that were already available for purchase to the general public. The ones that they got upset about were ones that people had photocopied, turned into a PDF, and downloaded onto the internet against the wishes of Wizard of the Coast. And I understand them being upset about that. Mm-hmm. However, pulling all the other material off the internet is... it's stupid. It doesn't accomplish anything other than, you know, pissing all the gamers off.
Yeah, because basically what you've done is you have now removed the only legal source for your PDFs from the internet. And whatever market share you did have that was downloading those is now gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I guarantee you most of them are still going to be acquiring the books anyway in PDF form.
Legally or not.
Right. So I don't know if this was the smartest move in the world. I have to believe there was probably a way better solution they could have employed.
This sounded like a knee-jerk reaction, but some lawyer-y type person somewhere thought this would be a good idea.
They took their ball and they went home.
Yes. On a positive note, Paizo has put all of their PDFs on sale for 35% off.
Oh, that's nice.
So, you know, while Wizards of the Coast is losing their share,
Paizo's
capitalizing.
Yeah, very nice.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we'd like to announce that we will begin tracking the continued non-release of the alpha test of Project Death Race. It's been nearly 2 months since the last bit of Project Death Race news from Robot Viking, and we grow anxious. Anxious! Yes, 2 months. Inconceivable. We're just here for the gasoline.
That's it. Gasoline.
That's right.
Got plenty of gas. Yeah. I need gasoline.
Seriously, though, Robot Viking guys, if you're listening to us, we'd like an update. We'd like to know what's going on. We want to pimp your product for you. We want to test it out, and we want to tell the entirety of the world how wonderful it is.
Yes, because I've got about $30 worth of Hot Wheels cars sitting on my workbench that have been hacked into little bitty pieces and put back together with guns and stuff.
And you'll make Andy cry.
You will.
If we don't get to play around with it some.
I would be truly upset.
And Andy doesn't look good when he's crying, because the mascara just runs, like, all over.
Oh, yeah, it goes everywhere.
Know? And his eyeshadows, it's, you know, the lash liner. And it's bad.
My false eyelashes fall out, and they go down to my cheeks, and then I look like that Han Solo figure that I got out of my collectibles one time. His eyes were down on his cheeks. It was great. It's a rare figure.
Yeah,
rare because they painted it that way.
They did the Han Solo in carbonite. And now they've done the Han Solo in sulfuric acid. So there you go. It's not canon.
It's just a little puddle on a stand there. Yeah. You can read more about these stories and others at www.boardgamenews.com, www.gamingreport.com, and of course www.robotviking.com.
And I have one more announcement.
Do you?
There will be no "what did he say today." We're dealing with the undefinable. So, on with the show. Well, Gamer Nation, we're going to take a moment here, and we are going to reflect on the passing of a gaming legend. Earlier this week, Dave Arneson passed away from cancer, and we thought long and hard about how we were going to handle this and what we were going to do. And we weren't around when Gary Gygax passed away either, so we kind of wanted to combine things into one here. For those of you who don't know, Gary Gygax and Dave Arneson are kind of the grandfathers of role-playing games. They're responsible for pretty much anything that passes as a role-playing game to this day. They created D&D way back in the early, mid-60s, whatever, or a form of it. Gradually developed it into the first real role-playing game in history. And they changed the gaming industry with this invention. And so we felt that what we wanted to do was to not so much become maudlin and, or just give it a glancing blow with a moment of silence or something like that. We wanted to spend some time and talk about what effect their creation has had on our lives. But we wanted to do it in kind of a positive way. Not in a, "oh, I'm so sorry they're gone," and I'm, because, you know, we are, you know, sorry that they passed away, but we also understand that this eventually happens, and I'm told this is true, this eventually happens to everybody, even me.
Everybody?
Everybody.
Wow.
So, you know, maybe if you want some kind of tribute to them, or you want a moment of silence for them, or you choose some other method for honoring them, I'm sure that any number of gaming podcasts are out there right now producing episodes that do that for you. And not to say we don't feel something for their passing away, but we're just choosing not to go that route with the way we're going to handle this passing. Instead, what we want to do is we want to talk about what role-playing has done for us and what these two men have given to the world at large through their efforts. I'm gonna start out actually by telling a story from my childhood. I'm gonna try not to repeat things that I've told everybody before, but this is one from quite a ways back. As a child growing up, I was not the most coordinated of individuals, and some would say I have not overcome that yet. But as a result, athletic endeavors were not my strong suit, and I often found that I was the proverbial last pick in any sport that happened to be going on. And this lasted until about the fourth grade or so, when, as I've said before, a friend of mine who lived basically next door to me came home one day with the first set of D&D. And we began playing it. And I discovered that I was pretty good at it, actually. I had this ability to think through situations or find unique solutions or whatever that made a difference. And my accomplishments, and I don't know that a lot of people will see this in the same way that I do. My accomplishments became dominated not so much by what I did physically as what I was able to do mentally. I never excelled at sports. I would say that probably sports are my least favorite area of accomplishment. I mean, I've accomplished a few things, you know, but over the years, one of the things that D&D gave to me, and one of the things these gentlemen were able to show me through their game, was that the mental accomplishments that one is capable of are at least as, if not more than, more appropriate or important than the physical accomplishments of others. So when I look at my childhood and I find things that I am proud of, things that I feel as if I have done well at, they're not in the realm of the physical. They're more in the realm of the mental. And I take a certain amount of pride in my ability to use my brain in a number of different and varied situations. It's probably one of the reasons I'm doing the job I do now, is because the brain works better than the body does, at least on me. And so I began to develop those skills through this game and other things that have allowed me to become kind of the individual I am today.
Yeah, that's one of the things that's impressed me over the last couple of years since I've started gaming with you, is how quickly you think on your feet and how differently you think from some of the other people at the gaming table. I try and be an outside the box type of thinking person, but usually I'm the blunt end of the club that's used to knock down doors. So it always impresses me when you come up with something. It's especially if I'm running a game and you just completely throw me a curveball, and it's like, I just wouldn't have thought of that. And it's great to see people do that in a game.
Yeah, and that translates, like I said, that translates into other things I do. The job I do is pretty much, you got to use your brain the whole time. And now that Andy started there, he will recognize the validity of this next statement. There are people that I work with that don't use their brain a lot of the time. The ability to think flexibly and to evaluate a situation, maybe even a situation that you can't even see, to try to find logic and reason behind what's going on, is vitally important in what I do, because that's the only way you're going to get inside some of these kids' heads, is to try to think like them and try to use whatever you can bring, whatever experience you have, to try to help them out. One of the other things that D&D and role-playing games and games in general have been able to show me is that not everybody that you meet is necessarily strange or different or to be avoided. Because over the years, I've gamed with probably, just conservatively, I'm going to say 30 or 40 different people in various ways, either board games or role-playing games or whatever. And the reason I mentioned board games in with this is that the role-playing games were my gateway into board games and things. But I've probably gamed with about 30 or 40 people over the years. Just face-to-face, and another few over the internet, and, you know, in the same room as others at tournaments and things like that. And by and large, 90% of them are great people. And the only thing we have in common is the game or games that we are playing at that time. So it broadened my social horizons. It made me more open to the people around me and the experiences around me that are available. Because really, if I were left to my own devices, I'd be a pretty solitary person. I don't know that I would socialize all that much if I wasn't absolutely forced into it. But gaming has shown me that there are people out there that no matter where they come from or what they do or who they are or what they sound like or what they look like, they're worth getting to know and talk to and be around and learn from. And I think when we talk about all the things that games can help you do, if you remember back to our skills episode and some of the other experiences you no doubt have had as a game player yourself, the social aspect is really the big one. I've seen it take children who don't like anybody because of things that have happened to them and allow them to open up a little more. And, you know, maybe not correct them entirely, but allow them to open up a little more and be better people than they were when they started. And even if that lasts just for a few minutes, at least they know what it's like. So, Andy, why don't you tell us a few of the things that role-playing games have done for you or helped you with or whatever.
I think like you, it's really opened my eyes to the broad variety of people out there that actually do play games. It's not this very one-sided, stereotypical type of person that you see playing games, especially role-playing games. Not to say that there aren't those out there, but there is a very wide variety of people that enjoy the kinds of games that we do. And I've gone to conventions, and of course, you see the people that dress up in the costumes and that go overboard, and that's fine. You're getting into it, and you're playing the game, and you're having fun. That's great. Well, if you're going to do it at a convention, that's one thing. Just don't do it when you go down to Burger King. But a lot of people that I would have never thought would be gamers, I've met people of, high intelligent backgrounds, high-end jobs. When I had my store, there was a lawyer that came in regularly to buy his D&D stuff from me, which I thought, okay, I would have never would have pegged him for a D&D player. And I think that goes back to the old adage, you can't judge a book by its cover. You can't take a person at face value and say, well, this is what he does and this is who he is. You got to sit down at the table, get to know them, and find out what makes them tick, what they enjoy doing. And in doing so, you make more friends, you make more connections, you foster the hobby.
So our tribute to both Dave Arneson and Gary Gygax is not an obvious tribute. Our tribute is more in the people we have become because of what they gave to us. And I have to say, a majority of the way I approach things and the way I think about things comes in equal parts from my upbringing in my family and from my experiences with the game that they both created. And so for that, I have to thank both of them, I think. And that is my tribute anyway. So one of the things that we wanted to do at this point is a little bit special, I guess. We're going to go back as far as I can go with what I have available to me right now. And Andy and I are going to break out the Dungeons & Dragons box set from, I guess it's 1991. I don't know if the Gamer Nation is entirely familiar with this, but this was the introduction to Dungeons & Dragons in the early 90s to get people introduced to the game, get them familiar with the rules and that kind of stuff. If you've never seen it, it's pretty cool. It comes with this Dungeon Master screen with all these charts all over it and everything. It comes with a slightly expanded but still somewhat simplified rulebook. And a very nice map and some fold-up cardboard counters and whatnot. And it comes in this big black box with this red dragon lunging out at you from the middle of the box. And on the whole, it looks pretty cool. This is something I haven't really opened up to mess with in probably a good 10 years or so. And I don't even remember how I originally came across this thing, where I got it from or anything like that. But Andy and I are going to go through it with you. We're gonna crack it open. I have access to Advanced Dungeons & Dragons books and that kind of stuff. But as good as those are, they're a little complex to get into on a show like this. And so anyway, I'm going to be the DM. And Andy's going to be the player. And we're just going to give you a little taste of what it's like. I don't know how far in we'll go or anything like that. We'll try to get, you know, as far as seems reasonable. Hopefully you'll enjoy this, and hopefully you'll appreciate it in the spirit it is offered as a sort of memorial event, I guess, for Gary and Dave. So starting on page one. And these are little cards that come in the Dungeon Master's screen that you pull out and you walk through, and they gradually introduce you to the rules of the game and whatnot. I'm sure some of you will remember this. They're all color-coded and everything. So page one begins with, "What is the Dungeons & Dragons game?" Imagine that you live in another time and place. The world is very different from the one you know. There are no electric lights, airplanes, or televisions. Instead, this world is one of swords and castles. Magic and wizards are real. Elves and dragons stalk the depths of the wilderness, and mysterious forces of good and evil clash in daily struggle. You are one of the heroes of this world. You make it your business to battle terrible monsters, to explore ancient castles, and to recover the lost treasure of forgotten kings. The Dungeons & Dragons game is a role-playing game set in this world of magic and high adventure. And I will pass on the "what is a role-playing game" portion, because I think we're all familiar about this, or with this. And we'll get to the start of this thing. The title is The Big Lizard. And this first section plays out a little bit like a choose-your-own-adventure, if you're familiar with that. We've talked about what role-playing is, but experience is the best teacher. Let's play. In the read-along adventure below, we're going to skip the rules for now and get to the heart of role-playing. Decision-making. You've come to the town market to meet a merchant who wants you to do an errand for him. When you reach his shop, he smiles. Then he hefts a 4-foot-long lizard onto the counter. Around the beast's neck is a leash, and over its head is a burlap sack. The merchant says, "Deliver this to Zanzer Tem, and he'll pay you a gold piece." He gives the lizard a shove. It flops onto the floor. As the merchant turns to other business, he issues a last warning. No matter what you do, don't take the sack off its head. There are two ways to reach Zanzer's tower. If you follow the dark corridor of Thief's Alley, we'll continue with section two. If you go through the crowded streets of Merchant's Parkway, continue to section three. Which will you do, Andy?
Well, against my better judgment, I think I'm going to follow the dark corridor to avoid as many people as I can.
Very well. The lizard trots along at your heels like a well-trained dog, but it stops to poke its burlap-covered snout into every pile of garbage you pass. At one such stop, a group of unwashed children approach. They begin petting the lizard, asking why you have covered its head. Do you chase the children off, or do you explain that you were told to leave its head covered?
I'll politely explain that I was told to leave its head covered.
"I don't know why its head is covered," you answer, "but the man who gave it to me warned me not to take the sack off."
"Must be a basilisk," says one of the children. "They'll turn you to stone."
The children let you continue on your way. You reach Zanzer Tem's tower without any more trouble. Before you can knock, a black-haired wizard opens the door. At last, he says, eyeing the lizard. Bring it inside. He leads the way into a small hallway, then fetches a gold piece from his pocket. Here's your payment, he says. A bright, shiny gold piece. Look at how it glitters. Concentrate on the gold piece. You're getting very sleepy. As Zanzer speaks, your eyelids begin to droop. Before you know it, you're asleep. Congratulations, you delivered the lizard. But it appears Zanzer has bigger plans for you. So, the next part of this is, what is a dungeon master? On Dragon Card 1, that's what these are called, are dragon cards. The Big Lizard was a read-along adventure. A short section of text described what you saw or heard, then asked you to make a decision. You didn't need rules, and you didn't have to make up what happened next. The read-along adventure did all that for you. But read-along adventures usually aren't as much fun as regular adventures. That's because you can choose only the decisions the text provides, instead of ones you think up yourself. For example, if you had loaded the lizard into a cart in the Big Lizard, you could have avoided a lot of trouble. Unfortunately, the text didn't offer you that option, so you couldn't do it. In a regular Dungeons & Dragons game, however, you could have told the Dungeon Master what you wanted to do. He would have adjusted the adventure accordingly. Read-along adventures can't do this because the author can't predict what every reader will do. In regular adventures, though, the Dungeon Master is there to adjust the story. It's like having the adventure writer playing in your game. It then goes on to give you a slightly more refined idea of what the Dungeon Master is and what he can do. And then it says, what is the most important thing to remember as a Dungeon Master? As the Dungeon Master, you will soon learn the rules of the Dungeons & Dragons game. No matter how many rules you remember, the most important rule of all is to be fair. As the Dungeon Master, you must never take sides. You will play the roles of all the creatures in the dungeon. You must do so fairly, without favoring the monsters or the players. While you're pretending to be a monster, you will be tempted to think you are competing against the players. You may even find yourself wanting to bend the rules so that the monster side has the advantage. Don't. Always remember that the players are competing against the monsters they meet, not against you. Never forget the real way to win in the Dungeons & Dragons game, by having fun. If you favor the monsters, your players won't have any fun. Then everybody will lose. On the other hand, you may be tempted to bend the rules in favor of the players. This is okay occasionally, but don't do it too often. If you help the players by frequently breaking the rules, you will take the excitement out of the game. So, we turn that card over and we have a little bit more here. This is called Zanzer's Dungeon. As a DM, you must adjust the story to fit the actions your players take. Imagine how the other side will react to the PC's successes, and what if the PCs goof up? The read-along adventure below will help you learn to do this. It begins where the Big Lizard left off on Dragon Card number 1. Before you read Section 1, unfold the map that came with your Dungeons & Dragons game, and I've given that to Andy already, so he should be unfolding it right now.
Indeed.
Lay it on the table so that the Zanzer's dungeon side is up. Okay. Pick a fold-up counter to represent your character and place it in room number 1. And it also asks you to assemble the fold-up counters labeled Jurge and Axel. Don't worry about that too much. They will be in the hallway in front of room 1. You awaken in a musty room. 3 walls are solid stone, but the 4th is made of thick iron bars. You're in jail. A hairy monster enters the hallway in front of the jail. Following it is a brawny man with bound hands. The monster stops in front of your cell and fishes a key from its pocket, then starts to open the door. Would you like to try to escape when the monster opens the door, or do you decide to wait in the cell and question the man?
I'll wait in the cell and question the man.
You stand back. The monster opens the cell door. He unties the man's hands and pushes him inside. After the monster locks the door and leaves, you turn to the man and ask, "Where are we?" And then we have some instructions to place the counter labeled Axel in the cell and remove the one labeled Jurge from the map. The brawny man is Axel. He's a selfish con artist. Axel never does anything for anybody without getting paid. If you think Axel would answer your question for free, we'll go to Section 6. If you think Axel would ask how much you would pay for an answer, turn to Section 7. So, you think he's going to answer for free, or is he going to want to be paid?
Well, he'll probably want to be paid, but I'm not going to offer him anything. I'll merely ask, since we're both in the same cell.
Okay, so we'll go to Section 6 and see what it says. We're in Zanzer Tim's dungeon, Axel says. It's located at the edge of... For no reason at all, Axel falls ill and dies. A moment later, so do you. And we go on to Section 8. This adventure wasn't much fun, was it? You violated the most important rule in the Dungeons & Dragons game. Be fair. It wasn't fair to decide that George would open the door and that Axel would answer your questions just because you wanted them to. As the Dungeon Master, you should always make the fair decision, or your games won't be fun. So we go back to Section 2 and try again. Let's think about this here. Okay, so this is a decision you should have taken from 1, apparently, which is trying to escape when the monster opens the door.
Okay.
As the monster turns its key, you move a little bit closer to the door, waiting for just the right moment to leap to freedom. The monster's name is George. He's a hobgoblin Zanzer Tim hired to be a jailer. George has been a jailer long enough to be careful when he opens the jail door. When he sees you moving toward the door, he knows you intend to escape. Do you think that George would open the door, knowing that you'll try to escape, or do you think he would tell you to stand back before opening the door?
He'll probably instruct me to stand back.
Okay.
I'm wise to your tricks, prisoner, George says. Stand back before I open this door.
You stand back. The monster opens the cell door. He unties the man's hands and pushes him inside. After the monster locks the door and leaves, you turn to the man and ask, "Where are we?" And again, do you think he's going to answer for free, or do you think you're going to have to pay him?
I'm going to bribe him with a shiny gold piece if I still have it on my person.
We'll see here. How much is it worth to you? Axel asks. I don't have any money, you answer, displaying your empty pockets. Axel grins, and then fishes a set of funny-shaped dice out of his pocket. Maybe you can win the answer, he says. This adventure will be continued on the next Dragon Card. Perhaps everything hasn't gone the way you would like, but that's the way it is with adventures. They're a lot more fun when there's a little suspense. Hey, guess what? This section's all about how to use the funny dice.
Imagine that.
Yes, and I'm going to breeze through this portion because it's all fairly obvious to people who have played role-playing games before. If you haven't played role-playing games before and this is capturing your interest, virtually any role-playing book you pick up will tell you how to use the dice. Okay, so let's get on with our adventure here. Next section is called Axel's Funny Dice. As DM, you will need to know the many different ways to use dice in the Dungeons & Dragons game. During the read-along adventure below, Axel will help you learn more about using dice. I hear you getting them out now.
I'm getting them out now. I've got funny dice.
Excellent. We'll play for points, Axel says. If you reach 100 first, I'll answer your question. If I get 100, you'll do my work. Axel hands you a D4, then takes a D6 for himself. You can roll first, he says, then I'll roll. If I beat your number, I get 5 points. If I don't, you get 5 points. Nobody gets any points if we tie. If you tell Axel the game is unfair, we'll go to Section 2. Otherwise, roll the D4, then roll the D6 for Axel. Whoever rolls highest earns 5 points. Keep track of the score on a piece of paper. Keep rolling until either you or Axel get 25 points, then continue with Section 3. Go for it.
Okay. Axel got a 4, I got a 3.
Silly Axel.
Yes.
So Axel beat you to 100, and I'll read the next section here. I win, screams Axel, jumping up and down. You'll make my cot every day. And then we go on to section 11. As you've probably guessed, Axel was cheating by taking advantage of the odds. There can be several ways to roll the same number, depending on the kind of die you roll. Each way stands a different chance. For instance, when Axel used a d12 and gave you 2d6, he was 3 times as likely to roll a 12 as you were. This is why you must always follow dice rolling instructions carefully. All right, so we reach a new section of the Dragon Cards. This is... what is a Dungeons & Dragons game character? In The Big Lizard and Zanzer's Dungeon, you pretended to be somebody else. You were playing a character. A character is the person you pretend to be when you roleplay, but in the Dungeons & Dragons game, there is more to a character than what you think he's like. We must define your character's abilities, so that we can use the game rules to see if he succeeds or fails when he tries to do something difficult. To do this, we use statistics. Statistics define such things as how strong, smart, and handsome a character is. A Dungeons & Dragons character is defined by your imagination and his statistics. There's then a section admonishing you to keep a clear distinction between the player and the character. In other words, you are a player, your character is a piece of paper. Thank you, Jack Chick.
Wow.
Yeah. So, let's move on here to dinner. In the read-along adventure below, your character and Axel are still cellmates. Congratulations. Just react as you think your character would. You sit in your cell with nothing to do. Finally, Axel says... What's your name? How do you make a living? How old are you? So on a piece of paper, write a name for your character. Any name you like. Decide how he made a living before becoming Zanzer's prisoner. Was he a stable boy? A wizard's apprentice? A street urchin? Pick any job you like, but your character shouldn't be too powerful. Instead of being a famous knight, for instance, he would be a squire. Pick an age that fits his job, around 16 to 20 years old. Now you have a character. So what did you decide?
My character's name is John. Mm-hmm. He is 16 years old, and he is a muckraker.
A muckraker. Okay, before the invention of the press. And
yes.
Yeah, reportage. Okay, so your job is to rake muck. It's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
After a while, George the Hobgoblin brings in 2 bowls of gruel. He slips them through a slot in the door. Axel immediately goes over and takes both bowls. Hey, you say, isn't one bowl mine? It is, if you can take it away from him, George answers as he is leaving. Go ahead and try, Axel says, or maybe you'd rather play dice for them. So, what do you think, play dice for your dinner or try to take your bowl away from Axel?
Well, since I know the dice thing isn't going to work, I'm going to try and take it from him.
You reach for the gruel. Axel cocks a leg as if he's going to kick you. If you try to grab Axel's leg and push him over, we'll go to section 6. If you step back where Axel can't kick you, we'll go to section 7.
I will step back because if I grab his leg, I'll probably wind up dumping both bowls on the floor.
You step back as Axel kicks. He falls, and you step forward to grab your bowl of gruel. Axel lands on the floor, spilling his bowl all over himself. You'll regret this, Axel says. The gruel tastes awful. You make a sour face, then look at Axel. I don't know why you tried to take my gruel, you say. Nobody could eat 2 bowls of this stuff. And this will be continued on the next card. So, pretty linear so far, right? The next card covers making up a PC and the character record sheet and the ability scores. If you really need more details on that, well, yeah, we'll do it some other time. This is called Breakfast on the other side of this card. In the read-along adventure below, Axel may discover he's not so tough. You and Axel pass more hours evaluating each other in hungry silence. You decide Axel is pretty strong, but he's also awkward and slow. He's not very smart, but he has spent enough time on the streets to have lots of common sense. From what you can see, he seems healthy, but he's so ugly that few people will befriend him. Let's see what kind of character you are. Take out the sheet of paper with your character's name, job, and age on it. Write strength near the left-hand margin. Roll 3d6 and record the result next to strength. And bonuses. So your strength was a 6, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's a -1.
And that goes in...
It just goes right next to your strength.
Adjustments, yeah. Okay. -1.
Your intelligence was 11.
11.
So there's no adjustment for that.
Okay. Wisdom was a 10.
Wisdom was a 10, so there's no adjustment for that.
Okay, dexterity was 11.
No adjustment.
Okay, constitution was a 12.
Also no adjustment.
And charisma was a 4.
Youch. -2. -2.
Apparently I have a large wart on my chin.
It would seem so. So you've just made a character sheet, and we go to section 2. Finally, George returns. He carries a single loaf of bread. Breakfast, he says, tossing the bread through the bars. The loaf lands on the floor between you and Axel. Stay away, it's mine, Axel snarls. Unfortunately, you are too hungry to let Axel the bully have all the bread. If you think your character is strong enough to fight for the bread, we'll go to section 3. If you think your character is smart enough to trick Axel, continue with section 4. And if you think your character is fast enough to grab the bread first, we'll go to section 5.
I think I'm fast enough to get it.
Okay. Section 5. You leap forward and grab for the bread. If your dexterity score is 11 or higher, we'll continue on to section 10. If it's 10 or less, we'll go to section 11.
Okay, my dexterity is 11.
Excellent. Section 10. You are quicker than Axel. You grab the bread first. Then we go to section 12. There's enough bread for both of us, you say, ripping the loaf in two and tossing half to Axel. When will you learn it's easier to be friends than enemies? We will continue on the next dragon card. Isn't this exciting? And this is really what it was like, trying to learn all this stuff, was you just really had to step through things very carefully. So then we have a discussion about non-player characters, and how to define them, and what the GM or the DM does with them, and how they'll react, and managing monsters and reaction roles, and all that kind of stuff. Then we go to Axel's job. So far, you've spent most of your time playing just your player character, but as DM, you'll have to play many different non-player characters. This read-along adventure will help you learn how to do this. After breakfast, you watch Axel, and he watches you. You don't know much about your cellmate, so you ask, "What do you do for a living, Axel?" As a DM, you will be asked many questions like this. How would you respond if one of your PCs had asked this question? Consider what you and the players already know about Axel. He's strong, but slow and clumsy. He's not very smart, but he is streetwise. He looks fairly healthy, but not handsome. He's a bully who likes to cheat at dice games. And think of a job for Axel, which I will do, and write it down on a piece of paper. Anything you make up is fine, as long as it doesn't contradict what you and the players already know. For instance, Axel could be a grave digger, since someone who spends all day digging holes would be strong like Axel. Or you might decide that he is a gambler, since he likes to cheat at dice. One choice is as good as another. I think Axel is going to be the, what we like to call a street thug. Okay, he goes around harassing people. After you decide on Axel's job, decide how he answers the question your character asked. Would Axel keep his job secret? Perhaps he's ashamed of it or does something illegal, or would he be willing to reveal it? I don't think Axel's going to be very honest with you, frankly. So we'll go to section 3 here. Axel scowls at your question, then says, "My job is none of your business. Why do you want to know?" He stands, and then narrows his eyes. "Are you a spy? Are you trying to get me to admit to something?" he demands suspiciously. From his response, it seems that Axel is trying to hide something. His job is probably something illegal. Notice that we're making up more about Axel as we go along. This is how most NPCs develop. We haven't changed anything that we already know about Axel. We've just added to it. And the adventure continues on the next dragon card. That was mostly for me, apparently. Aha! Here we go. The question at the top of this is the green card we're on now, the green tabbed card and the dragon cards, if you happen to have this out and you're following along to see what we're doing. It's titled, "What Happens When There's a Fight?" Andy loses. So it goes through, it describes a combat round, and in this particular version of D&D, combat rounds are about 10 seconds of game time. That seems like a lot nowadays, doesn't it?
Yeah.
During a round, a character may perform one action. Move, attack, cast a spell, talk, or any other single action that a person could do in 10 seconds. The character cannot do two things in a single round, such as run 20 feet. This is way different than what we have now. You get one action. In real life, it might seem possible to do more than one thing in 10 seconds, but in the Dungeons & Dragons game world, characters can only take one action during a round. This is because combat is confusing and frantic. The implication there being that players are somewhat dumb. What somebody can do in a calm state might be impossible when a dragon is swinging its wicked claws at him. Of course, not everyone in a fight plants his feet and slugs it out toe-to-toe. When a character attacks during a round, we assume that he is maneuvering for position. He can scuffle and dance around up to 5 feet while he's fighting. Maneuvering like this does not count as an action during the round. So, I had forgotten you still got a 5-foot step way back then.
Yeah.
Then describes the combat sequence, which is essentially a checklist. George's mistake. Unfold the big map sheet that came with your Dungeons & Dragons game, lay it flat on the table, etc., etc. So we need to remember that George is in the hallway outside the jail, near room 2. Or in room 2, I guess.
In room 2,
yeah.
Okay.
George the Hobgoblin enters the hallway carrying the jail key. He puts the key into the lock and growls, "Axel, come with me." Axel gives you a quick glance and winks. He steps towards the cell door, then suddenly collapses. He curls up into a tiny ball, crying, "Don't take me to the salt mine!" George scowls at Axel. "Get up!" When Axel just keeps whimpering, the hobgoblin enters the cell, leaving the key in the lock. He goes over to Axel. This is the end of round 1. Notice that both George and Axel moved this turn, but did not do any fighting. Place George's counter next to Axel in the jail, and we go to section 2. You know what Axel is doing. He is distracting George's attention so you can attack from behind. You stand up and push George over from behind. "Good work," Axel says. He quickly stands up and kicks the hobgoblin, probably right in the fork. Roaring in anger, George jumps back to his feet and tries to hit Axel, but misses. This is the end of round 2. All 3 of you made attacks. You all maneuvered for position, but nobody moved more than 5 feet. Do you want to run to the exit, or do you want to stay and fight George?
Oh, I think I'm going to be running towards the exit.
Okay. George swings at Axel again, this time connecting with a solid punch. To your amazement, Axel does not fall down. "Let's go," you say, leaving the cell. Axel is right behind you. As you step into the hallway, Axel pushes the door shut. He asks, "Should we lock it?" This
yes.
is the end of round 3. Your counter and Axel should be in room 2. But leave George's counter in room 1, because George attacked. He could not follow when you and Axel moved out of the cell. So you want to lock the door, huh?
Absolutely.
Okay. "Good idea," you say. As you turn the key in the lock, a hairy fist flies between the bars, catching you square in the nose. Everything goes black. This is the end of round 4, and possibly your entire game. While you took your action to lock the jail door, Jurge took his to attack. The adventure will continue when you wake up on the next dragon card. So, we talk on the next card about how to use the initiative roll, when do the players have to decide what their characters are doing, and what is the surprise round. Next card is entitled The Goblin's Surprise. You got your map sheet out. We're going to have some goblins that are going to be in room 3. If Jurge knocked you out in Jurge's Mistake, the last adventure, put your character's counter and Axel's counter in room 1. Jurge's counter is not on the map. Wake up, Axel says. We can escape. You open your eyes to see Axel's face. It is covered with bruises. What? You ask. Jurge left the door unlocked, Axel says. As you stand, Axel opens the cell door. After you, he says. Why do I have to go first, you ask? Because I figured out that we can still escape, Axel replies. You shrug, then leave the cell and go to the only door leading out of the hall. When you try to push it open, it seems stuck. So move your counter and Axel's counter into room 2. You lay your shoulder against the door and give it a hard push. It flies open, revealing a narrow hall. In the hall is a short, ugly creature with livid gray skin and beady, glowing red eyes. It's a goblin. This is the beginning of a new fight. Make a surprise roll for each side. Roll 1d6 for you and Axel, and 1d6 for the goblins. I'll take care of the goblins out here. The goblins have a 4.
Okay, I'm rolling a d6 for both of us?
Yeah.
I got a 3, Axel got a 2.
Somebody is surprised. If your side rolled a 1 or 2, you and Axel must stand still for 1 round. The goblin escapes through the door leading to room 4. Take the goblin counter off the map and continue to section 8. You listen at the door, but hear nothing on the other side. You step into room 4. So that was essentially the entirety of the surprise round.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes. Because the next card to come up, card number 9, is about character movement. How fast can your character move? PCs and human NPCs move 40 feet per round. If something's in the way, they've got rules for dealing with that. If your character runs, you can run 120 feet per round. Talks about withdrawing and retreating. So we go on to Frightened Kobold. You should be next to the door leading to room 3. And Axel should be in room 3 just behind your counter. As you step into room 4, you see a small humanoid with scaly, rust-brown skin and a dog-like snout standing next to you, trying to open a door. When it sees you, the kobold shrieks and stops tugging at the door. This is the beginning of a new combat round, so make a surprise roll for yourself and the kobold.
Yeah, of course. I got a 1, he got a 4.
A good lord, man. He rolled like crap.
Yeah. The dice don't like me.
The kobold runs away, screaming help. Move the counter, the kobold's counter to space B, and then you will roll 1d6 for each side to determine initiative.
Okay. I got a 6. And he got a 6.
The kobold goes to a corner of the room and screams, help! Guards, help! Move the kobold's counter to space B if it's not there already. If you ignored the kobold and tried to open the door... Will you be ignoring the kobold and trying to open the door, or will you be attacking the kobold?
I'm going to attack him because he's making noise and that draws the attention of guards. So.
And combat is, of course, entirely silent. You run over... You run over to the kobold to attack. Unfortunately, you cannot move and attack in the same round. So roll initiative again.
I got a 5. He got a 3.
You grab the kobold and say, be quiet. When the monster stops yelling, you lock it in the hall in front of the jail, room 2. Now what? Asks Axel. Remove the kobold's counter from the map, and this will be continued on the next dragon card. Hey, I think you survived a combat round.
Hey! Imagine that.
Mm-hmm. So the next card talks to us about hitting your opponent, conducting melee. Oh, and it introduces Thaco. Lovely, lovely Thaco.
Oh, yay.
Thaco, of course, stands for to hit armor class 0. Just so you know, basic armor class is 9. So according to Thaco, in order to hit an armor class of 9, you need to roll a 10 on a d20. And that's basic armor class, that's unarmored, nothing else. And we have a further list of the combat sequence. This is called Guards, this section, so guess what's going to be showing up here. Axel should be in room 4, so should you. In the two spaces closest to the door leading to room 3, but not in space A.
Not in space A. Okay.
There's one guard goes on space A, and a guard that goes in a space next to A that you and Axel are not standing in. Two guards rush into the room from room 5. Fortunately, they aren't wearing armor or carrying weapons. Well, these are crappy guards. This is the beginning of a new round. Use the combat sequence to run the fight. This is the first round of a fight, so you must roll for surprise. This is 1d6 for each side.
Okay. We both got 5s.
Excellent. Okay, so initiative is... neither of you surprised. Okay, so now you're going to roll initiative. A d6 for each side.
We got a 6. They got a 1.
They got a 1. Okay, you get the initiative. If you're moving... you can move your counter or Axel's. You cannot move through any space a guard occupies. Opening a door ends your movement for that round. Moving more than 5 feet also prevents you from attacking. So go ahead and decide what you're going to do and let us know.
Okay, well, since they're in adjoining spaces, I think we will gang up on one of the guards.
Okay.
Have Axel attack the one directly in front of him, and I will assist him if possible.
Sure. So this would be when you attack. So you need a 20-sider? You need to roll 10 or more for each of you to hit your targets.
8. Oh, I got a 12.
Okay, so give whichever guard got hit, give him 1 point. And now the guards will be attacking. First guard got a 6. And second guard got an 8. So nothing good there. So basically, we keep rolling initiative for each round, actually, surprisingly enough.
Huh, okay.
Yeah. But we're gonna pass on that part. Go ahead and make 2 more sets of die rolls for you guys.
Okay, for attacks?
Yeah.
Ooh, 1. And 11.
Okay, so that same guard gets another tick.
Okay.
And everybody on your side is scot-free.
Rosy and happy.
Okay, so we're gonna pass on some of the rest of this here. And we will make the glaringly ridiculous assumption that your side has been successful. Because I know how you roll dice. We have the dangers of being hit in combat. We have hit points. Battle over, and if the PCs get killed. So, here we go. Cleaning up the details. Congratulations, you've had your first Dungeons & Dragons game combat. Now that it's over, all that's left is cleaning up the details and recovering from the fight. After the last guard falls, you and Axel spend several minutes recovering your breath. You and Axel each have 6 hit points. This means you can take 6 points of damage before you die. Write hit points 6 on both your character record sheet and the paper you're using to keep track of Axel's information, assuming there was one. Note that hit points are used in 2 ways. First, they indicate the maximum amount of damage a character can take. When we talk about a character's hit points, we are referring to the maximum amount of damage he can take before dying. This amount will increase as your character grows more experienced, but it will not change very often. In your case, in Axel's, it is 6 hit points. Second, hit points indicate how much damage has actually been done to the character. When a character is hit, he suffers a certain number of points of damage. You add to these points as the character receives more damage, and you subtract from them as he is healed. A character's number of points of damage will change very often during an adventure, but when it equals or exceeds his number of hit points, the character dies. Axel looks around the room. He spies 2 vials of amber liquid lying near the door. He quickly grabs the vials, then drinks one down. He hands the other to you, saying, "Drink this." You scowl at the vial. "What is it?" "You're new to this, aren't you?" he says. "It's a healing potion." He waits for you to finish drinking the foul-tasting liquid, then adds, "At least I hope it is." Axel was right. The two vials which the guards dropped contained magical healing potions. Erase the points of damage recorded next to the hit points on both your character record sheet and the paper you're keeping for Axel. You're both fully recovered. This card talks, this starts a new section. I think actually this is where we're going to end this. And I realize this may not have been exactly what people were expecting, but I gotta tell you, for a whole lot of people, this was the introduction to Dungeons & Dragons. There was no other way to really learn the game short of sitting down with some rather thick rule books and trying to puzzle it all out.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it is good to realize that this is how, or a similar method, is how Andy and I both really kind of got into the game. I mean, we either read the books or we got one of these boxed sets and we piled our way through it. In fact, I would say that if you managed to actually learn to play the game from this box set, you were pretty persevering, given the way this thing is laid out. But by the time you get to the end of it, it really does give you a full adventure to go through. Yeah, you've got Escape from Zanzer's Dungeon is the rest of this thing, parts 1 and 2. They also provide a place called Stonefast for the remainder of your adventure. If you wanted to run a second adventure or whatever, that's there also. And on the whole, it's actually pretty interesting. It's, you know, obviously some of it's intended for a single player to go through to get the hang of DMing and whatnot. And then, you know, you would gather up your friends and begin the adventure in earnest. And, you know, I've owned this thing since the dawn of forever, apparently. And it's just now occurred to me that each of these tabs has a different dragon on it. They're not just different colored tabs with the same dragon. They are different dragons on different tabs. That's very neat. I don't know why I had never realized that before, but I didn't. See, you learn something new, even from things you think you know already.
Yeah, one of the things that I thought was pretty interesting as D&D has progressed over the years, they've continued to put these box sets out, and the last couple that they had put out for the 3.5 edition were actually pretty nice. They were very streamlined, very quickly got you acclimated to the rules and into the playing system of the game, and was able to make a nice segue into role-playing.
Yeah, that is, I will give them full credit. They did actually make some really good additions that were easy to get a hold of and easy to wrap your head around and get into the game with. Not all of them have been that way, but quite a few have. And I'll tell you, it was funny running into Thaco again, because that was probably the most complicated thing you had going in the entire D&D experience. Right. Was trying to remember how Thaco worked and how it all fit together. And anyway, we took you through a portion of that, and I realize that's probably quite a bit longer than you might have actually wanted and whatnot and everything. But I hope that it's something that you... that one of the things you take away from this podcast today is that from humble beginnings like that, where you were choosing your own path, basically, and then gradually adding in layers and layers and layers of rules, that from that, we've gotten to a point in the hobby where not only has D&D now come into the fourth edition with, as you may have figured out, wildly different sets of rules than what we've got there.
Yeah.
But also that this kind of stuff is what spawned virtually every other role-playing game in existence, whether that be pen and paper, or whether that be a computer-based role-playing game, or an MMO, or anything like that. The idea that you are playing a character, telling a character's story, and taking that character from his first steps into an adventure all the way through to either his death or his retirement, all of that stuff came from this beginning. And so it's not just role-playing that has taken a loss by the passing of both Gygax and Arneson. It's computer games. It's storytelling. In some ways, storytelling, especially oral storytelling, is a lost art for the majority of the populace. And it used to be that that was the only way that we communicated information and history and things like that, was to tell a story. Somebody way back when, you know, we had to rub sticks together to get fire, or at least wait for a good lightning storm, somebody had to memorize the story of the people they were with, or the people they belonged to, in order to belong to them. And really, role-playing is just an extension of that original storytelling guy. We've now turned it into a game where it's not quite as important as it used to be, but still has all the same elements, the passage of information and history and entertainment onto the next generation of people, or in some cases the same generation of people. So one of the things that Dave and Gary did in the 70s was tie us back to a very old heritage where the story was how you learned. And depending on your approach to the game nowadays, whether that be on computer or pen and paper or just reading a good book, they helped continue that and helped bring us that much closer to where we started way back when.
On the table.
Well, Gamer Nation, there's not a lot that got on the table this week, but Andy did look at some stuff and has been checking a few things out. What do you got for us, Andy?
Well, I was treated to an interesting little thing from the folks at the Warhammer Historical Games end of the Games Workshop system. They make, as the name would suggest, historical wargaming.
No.
Rule sets.
Really?
Yes, it's really, it does.
That's weird.
I was surprised, but sure enough, that's what the name implies. I picked up the rule book for Legends of the High Seas. And what this is a skirmish scale miniatures game for the Golden Age of Piracy.
That sounds vaguely cool.
It is, actually. I'm very impressed with the rule set. It is akin to some of the other games from Games Workshop, like Necromunda or Mordheim, where you start out with a very small group of sailors, anywhere from 5 to a maximum of 30. So you don't have to buy these huge, encumbering armies. It's small little war bands of people. You've got the Royal Navy, you've got privateers, and of course you've got pirates. And a lot of the main rules are set up for ground battle skirmishes, but there's also rules for ship battles, as well as boarding ships and taking over other ships and things like that. So I'm kind of jazzed about this one.
Can I play Yellowbeard?
Yeah.
They'll have to kill me before I die.
Well, that sounds kind of cool. I mean, so this is historical, right?
Well, it's from the historical rules makers, I guess, whatever, Warhammer Historicals. It's period based, but it's not historically factual or anything like that. There are mention of a lot of special characters in there, such as Edward Teach and some of the more well known pirates of the late or early 1700s. Excuse me, late 1700s, early 1700s. And you can actually use them in game. You can hire them on and pay them a retainer to keep them in your war band. So it you gain experience along the way. You can pick up extra skills and weapons and things of that type. So I think it'd be fun to play. I like the whole pirate theme. So
cool. So that sounds actually kind of interesting. So you've talked about, I think, three different nautical miniature games in the course of our history so far?
Yeah, at least.
Of the three you've talked about, which do you think you're going to get done on the table first?
Well, I actually have a set of ships for the game that I can't remember right off the top of my head because I haven't...
Uncharted Seas, wasn't it?
Uncharted Seas or something like that. Yes, I actually have a set of the Dwarven ships for that.
Oh.
But I've also got the cutouts that we could use. We could use the paper cutouts that that came with the rule book, so we could play that.
Yeah.
I've probably got enough miniatures just on hand that we could probably play Legend of the High Seas here fairly quick.
Hmm.
So one of these we'll have some piratey shipney goodness.
Yeah, if we ever get Primordial Soup finished.
Yeah, I'm yeah.
Yeah. Sadly, Gamer Nation, Jake was out of town or unavailable or dead or something this Thursday, so we didn't get Primordial Soup finished. We don't know who's won yet. Hopefully we'll get it done next week. If not, I'm going to declare myself the winner and put the game away until we can get it played thoroughly.
I've got more amoeba on the board. So
yeah, but I'm better.
Actually, Jake has more amoeba on the... Oh, God, if Jake wins, we're mm-hmm, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, put it away, declare myself the winner.
We'll never hear the end of it. Yeah, but it... But anyways, that's what I did this week, and I've been pretty enthralled with the book. It's been a good read, so...
Cool.
Looks like a pretty good rule set, and looks like it could be fun.
Excellent. Well, it's time for the end of the show again, Gamer Nation. We've kind of grown used to it by now. Seems like a nice bowl of water and the occasional chocolate biscuit, and it hardly ever bites Andy anymore.
Yeah, hardly. Still got a hole in my back pocket from the last time. Our last show prompted a useful suggestion for gamers attending a convention. Donovan reminded us of the 3-2-1 rule from Radio Free Hamlet. The DM suggested that at a minimum, convention gamers should make sure they get 3 hours of sleep, 2 meals, and 1 shower a day. Sound advice.
Yeah, because you're going to do a lot of gaming. So 3 hours of sleep, you know, catch a catnap or something along the way, you'll make it through.
Yeah, because passing out in a squadron of pikemen, it never ends well.
No. We talked about our trade thread in the last show that we were going to put up, and we got approval from GM Chris to go ahead and do that. So it's up in the forums in the board and video game thread. If you've got board games that you are tired of playing or have played all you're going to play, or maybe they just don't suit your particular style, or they're not getting any use in your collection and you think maybe somebody else might like to use them, go ahead and put them up in the thread and offer them up for trade. You can do the same with video games as well, I guess. I don't see any reason why not to do that.
Yeah, and anybody that has the old, what's the game that we like to play, the Commands and Colors Ancients, what's the Civil War version?
Oh, Battlecry.
Battlecry. If anybody has that game, Brian and I would both like it. Me in particular, but I think Brian wants it too.
Yeah.
I've got a few games to trade. I might even be able to throw a coin your way, but if anybody has that, let us know, and we'll make a deal.
Yes, we will. GM Chris...
Because I want that game.
Yeah. GM Chris did ask me to make it very clear that D20 Radio and its hosts and owners and managers and that sort of thing, we can't be responsible for making sure that trades get completed or that anything that goes wrong gets fixed. So we ask that you be very, very sure of who you're trading with and be very sure that they're going to complete the trade. And, you know, be sensible about this thing. If somebody makes an offer that's too good to be true, well, chances are it probably is. So use your brains, but, you know, try to have fun with it all the same. So, yeah, check out the thread, and if you've got something you want to trade, list it up there.
Battlecry. Gotta have it.
Mm-hmm.
More than Pikachu.
Collect them all.
Once again, Gamer Nation, if you'd like to take a moment and write a review for the show on iTunes, it would be greatly appreciated. Just makes it about a ton easier for people to find the show, and we have having new listeners.
We love it, love it, love it. And finally, if you'd like to contact us about anything having to do with the show, send us an email at gameon@d20radio.com. and visit our forums at www.d20radio.com/forums. Also, we've still got that poll up for you to tell us about your favorite segment of the show. With episode 20 coming up in a few weeks, we'd like to fine-tune things a bit and want to hear what you do or don't like. We do it all for you, after all.
Episode 20.
Episode 20. I think there might be something special coming down the pike for that
there,
one.
There might be, yeah.
Yep.
I've got a lampshade picked out for that party in particular.
Awesome. Is this a private party, or can anybody show up wearing a lampshade and puke in a fishbowl? So, until next time, Gamer Nation.
Game on.
This podcast is intended for entertainment and educational purposes only. All specific names, titles, or products mentioned are copyrighted by the respective rights holders. Some sounds and music are provided courtesy of Soundsnap.com and Freesound.org. Reboot is copyright Alliance Entertainment. All original content of this podcast and its related website are intellectual property of Game On and D20 Radio.
Have any flubs to put back here?
Oh, there was a stumble in there from me somewhere.
Hmm.
Yeah, we can always just go with some more cool music.
Yeah, we could.